There it is. I knew it was coming eventually. I knew that it was going to happen eventually. I was waiting for
take
it.
Take that to New York.
We finally got it.
Nah, we don't want that in New York.
Nah, you take that.
No?
We keeping the whoop whoop, but you can take that screaming to New York.
Yeah, that's you ain't getting the whoop whoop.
Distorted.
Yeah, we won't be doing a screaming on the show either. We're not New York Sports Talk Radio. All that screaming and hollering they do, we're not doing that.
Very proper. Very proper.
Mike and the Mad Dog with Keisha.
I can see him now.
The New York Jets, they're a disaster. They're going to win.
It's going to happen for sure. Oh, my gosh, I love it. I love it. Well, guys, the Jets seem to be in a bit of disarray right now. They're going through a lot of tumult. They're going through a lot of chaos. And they really need to get their act together if they're going to find a way to sneak into the AFC East. I feel like that's what's coming.
That ain't what they do in New York. They fire
well, this
everybody.
Isn't New York. This isn't New York,
everything.
My friend. Yeah, well, we will see. The bubble is sealed, and Russell Westbrook is not in it. Russell Westbrook has tested positive for coronavirus. He posted that on his social media. He says he's feeling fine. He says he's looking forward to joining his teammates. James Harden is still not in the bubble as well. We don't know exactly why he's not in. We can take some educated guesses right there. But this is what's supposed to happen, right? That before you can get in, you need to test negative. He did not. I understand that if you're a Rockets fan, if you're Russell Westbrook, you're disappointed that you can't go. But this is how this is supposed to work.
No, it is. Because you want to make sure you cut it off before it even gets started. And that is the good thing about having a bubble, what the NBA is able to do, unlike Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball, individual teams could certainly stop their players from joining their training camp, much like the Dodgers did with Kenley Jansen, so no one else is affected. They caught it before Westbrook was able to get on the plane. We all assume maybe Harden has some, came down with something as well because they're close friends. He's on the Rockets. And, you know, it's in the building. So you, when you look at it from that standpoint, it's supposed to go this way. You look at the Lakers, they took care of business, got everybody there that was supposed to be there. They tested everybody along with the other teams. You know, and so now that you're looking at it, there's, you know, maybe two or three guys that are not there yet in Orlando from their teams because of the situation. But now that they clean up, they get it taken care of, they go inside the bubble, they don't leave. You should have smooth sailing as long as no one goes out or no one comes in that can't detect it and then start to spread it to whoever's inside the bubble. We should have a basketball season.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, fingers are crossed. You know, we know that, you know, all these leagues, whether it's World Team Tennis, which is on ESPN, whether it's MLS, which is also on ESPN, these are the test subjects, right? These are the first ones out there trying to execute their sport with no crowd and in this bubble. And we've heard nothing yet anyway in terms of, you know, red flags. You know, there's been nothing. So I know that we've been clowning guys who stepped out for that Olive Garden salad or whatever the hell they stepped out for. But so far so good, the first two leagues in this country that are trying to operate in the bubble, we haven't heard anything in terms of a spread or anything of that nature. So that's a good sign.
Well, and what's a good sign, too, is that when you look at, like, the MLS, for instance, where they've had two teams just say, you know what, we're out. That's what's going to have to be, right? That this is how it's weird. It's something we've never seen before where an entire team just says, you know what, we're not going to play because of some infections, but that's the way that it's going to have to be. That's the only way this stuff works is instead of trying to muscle through with some guys, you say, you know what, we have too many guys that have tested positive. We're going to shut it down. We're going to tap the mat and say we're not going to play. I wouldn't be totally shocked if something like that happens in Major League Baseball or somewhere else. Instead of shutting the whole thing down, if we have a team that has a high level of infection, you just say, you know what, we're going to take them out of the mix. We're going to play without them.
And how does that and that just you just take those,
it's a forfeit. It's a forfeit.
Yeah. Take it away. It's a forfeit. You know, I would hate to see that happen to teams. You know, I certainly would hate to see that happen. But you got to do what's right for everybody, and the teams can't be selfish. And hopefully, you know, everybody's reporting everything the way that they're supposed to.
The Lakers guys also have decided that they're going to use KCP in Avery Bradley's spot, which is good news. KCP has started a bunch of games for the Lakers this season. In fact, they're 17-3 in games where KCP started in place of Avery Bradley. The teams that they played against, not exactly a murderer's row, but 17-3 against anybody means that the team is still clicking.
17-3 is a good win. You play who they put in front of you. You don't worry about anything except executing your offense and your defense and scoring points and rebounding and pushing it up and down the floor and playing basketball the way you know how. So when time comes, you and your coaching staff and your players can be ready to take on the Clippers, take on those Golden State teams of the past, take on the Phillies and the Bostons. You could do that by preparing and executing, because if you're not doing what you're supposed to do, then you can get popped by them. But if you are playing at the level that you played at going 17-3 and you took care of business at the way you were supposed to against those teams, those so-called inferior opponents, then when you play somebody that is legit, you're going to be hitting on all cylinders.
You know, the thing that's really interesting when you look at just KCP's arc with the Lakers to begin with, he really was the true first solidified sign that LeBron James was coming. You know, he was first. And because he's a clutch client and because of the nature of the contract, even down to a no-trade clause, and everybody was asking, how the hell does KCP have a no-trade clause? Well, now all of a sudden he's in his position as a starter for a team with championship aspirations. And so, you know, obviously no one wants to see any players not available because of injury, and we understand what Avery Bradley's situation is and have an appreciation for it. But it's somewhat fitting that the guy who was sort of like the first symbol of a resurgence for this franchise has now found himself into the starting lineup where he'll be a main contributor to hopefully a championship run.
Yeah, and look, with guys going down, with Rondo being injured, with Avery Bradley deciding not to rejoin the team, your depth is going to get tested. And I think where it gets interesting is with that depth that gets put in there, does the team still look like the team? And we already have an answer for that, at least for the KCP piece. He doesn't become the make or break guy in whether or not you win a championship. That's still LeBron and it's still Anthony Davis. Those are the guys that are going to determine whether they win this thing or not. But at least the team is still functioning like the team with him in there. Whether they're beating good teams or bad teams, it doesn't really matter to me a whole bunch. It just matters to, do they still look like they look? Yes? Okay, Con, let's keep it moving. Put KCP in there. Now the next step is they have to find that guy for Rondo. Does the team still look like the team with whoever is stepping into his spot? I know, LZ, that you've mentioned Alex Caruso a few times. Can he step into that Rondo role and have Kyle Kuzma still look like Kyle Kuzma, have that second unit still look like it's supposed to look, because we know that the starting unit's taken care of with KCP?
Well, it's certainly going to be a difference, right? It's not going to be quite the same, but as long as you're functioning on the positive side of things, then I think that's acceptable. Because Rondo's game is different than all of those guys and vice versa. As long as they're still able to do the things that they set out to do. And I think coaches always have packages available for different players in different situations. When Rondo's in, we're best at running it this way. When KCP is in, we're getting it and we're best at running it this way. Some principles from the way we run it with Rondo, some principles are there the way we run it with Kuz, some principles are there with Caruso. It just all depends, but I'm certain veteran coaches like a Jason Kidd and a Frank Vogel are on the same page in terms of having something at their disposal when they put those guys in to be able to get the same action going.
Well, you know, I feel very confident that Caruso is going to be able to come in and contribute in a positive way. But I do know that his approach to sitting at the offense is just different than, you know, what Rondo's would have been. Rondo is way more spontaneous within an offense, especially in the open floor. His ability to rebound is something that sometimes gets underestimated, but he's a fantastic rebounder from that position. I know a lot of people, you know, have noted that without Avery Bradley and Rondo that the Lakers lose their best two defensive guards. I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true because I've been watching. And yeah, I'm insinuating that some other people haven't been watching, but I have been watching.
And if who you are the think, other people's names?
I ain't going to name your names.
A reporter say, never reveals his source, Key.
I'm just going to say I've been up in Staples enough. I've been watching enough. I've been in the locker rooms enough. And I don't believe that the Lakers have lost their top two defensive guards. I do believe that if you either look at the numbers or just the eyeball test, you see that Rondo is not what he used to be defensively, and that Caruso is on par, if not a better defensive guard. Like, I'm just being real with you, just watching it. His ability to anticipate, his foot speed, you know, he just seems, it doesn't feel as if Rondo that we have is the Rondo that people are talking about. Now, Boston Rondo, that was a beast.
That's different. Yeah, that guy's gone.
That was a, that was a beast. But that guy ain't been around for a minute. So I don't think that you're going to see a tremendous drop off defensively. The offense will look different, but I don't think it's going to grind to a halt with Caruso. And then, as Ryan says, you know, Deion Waiters does have playmaking ability. He's got some good size, and he ain't scared.
No, he's not going to be
the right
scared.
Mixture.
Well, look, we've talked about this with Dave Roberts in the Major League Baseball situation that they're in. We'll talk about it, I'm sure, when we get to football season. We talk about Sean McVay. All of these coaches, when you think about it, Frank Vogel's job is not to make sure that LeBron James is doing what he needs to do. LeBron's going to take care of that. Anthony Day. What the coaches need to do, the managers need to do in this situation, is you need to be on top of all of these contingencies. And that's what coaching is, that if I don't have this guy, or if this guy is not performing at the level that I need him to, what's my plan B? If plan B doesn't work, what's my plan C? And it's just, these are just different circumstances, that the plan, instead of, you know, Rondo's is actually a pretty traditional issue where, you know, one of my important guys got hurt. I guarantee you they've thought about what they would do if Rajon Rondo gets hurt, what they would do if Alex Caruso got hurt or sick, or absolutely, whatever it might be. That these are all things that they've mapped out, that they've penciled out and know. Now, it doesn't mean they're all going to work, but it's not like they got caught flat-footed like, oh, blank, we don't have Rajon Rondo. Now what do we do? Let's go and try to figure it out. They have their contingency plans in places.
Absolutely. That's why I said that the coaches, I'm sure, have packages ready for all those guys at their disposal when they need to roll it out, because you're not going in there with one game plan. You're not going in there with one situation where it's just LeBron and AD. You have to think about all sorts of different scenarios when you coaching players in all sports. You have to know that I've got to make adjustments if this happens, if that happens. Because if you go in there with one game plan and you're not prepared, you're preparing yourself to fail.
All right, today was supposed to be the day that the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was held at Dodger Stadium. How many of the guys on the Dodgers would have made that team? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Have you guys lost your sense of time through this whole thing? Like, that a day can feel like a week and a month can feel like a day? Are you, do you guys lose track of time like I have?
No.
I'm pretty good.
No, it's because I'm still reporting, Travis, and so I'm still beholden to everyone else's schedule.
Yeah, me
so
too.
I know when the daytime is, when the nighttime is. I was waiting for, it was so funny. So I'm working on this piece and I'm working on some other things at the same time. And so I had someone from Senator Harris's office call 5 minutes early and it threw everything off. And I was like, damn it. I had this thing set, but your 5 minutes bleed into another person's 5 minutes. And then the Dodgers owner called 10 minutes early. So, yeah, I know what time it is at all time just because of the nature.
I'm not talking about time of day. I'm talking about the fact that you look up and today is July 14th. Today is the day we were supposed to be having the All-Star Game here in Major League Baseball. And it feels like an hour ago and simultaneously about 10 years ago that they pulled the plug on spring training. I mean, that we were all in different places. We were all doing our things and we were getting ready to start a Major League Baseball season. Well, we're more than halfway through it, or at least we should be. Didn't seem like it's been that much time to me.
No, it's been a long time. But you know, you down in Orange County, y'all stopped quarantining 4 months ago.
So, well, that's another issue.
It feels like, you know, being in the house the majority of the time, it feels like that. It feels like it's, you know, it's time to move on. But at the end of the day, that's not the case. And seems like here in the state, we're going to get locked down again for a long period of time.
Well, we just kind of did yesterday. We'll see what
else
is coming.
Yeah, but it's kind of that. I've been looking at that lockdown, to be honest with you. That to me is like some, I get it, it's surging, but that's like some political lockdown right there. And the reason I say that is because half them spots that he locked down, people weren't going to anyway. You know, like, it wasn't, everybody wasn't running to the gyms. people were still kind of, you know, one foot in, one foot out. Nobody going to no bowling alleys. Who going to a bowling alley?
I don't know about you. I don't know what you've been looking at, Keith. But I can tell you from my experiences, people have been flooding all those spots.
The bowling alley?
Flooding everywhere. Listen, in Arizona, they were running to Dave and Buster's, no mask, no social distance. As soon as Dave and Buster's
ain't different
were open,
down there. That's like down
it's the well, I'd love to be exclusionary like that.
Nothing, it's nothing to do there except play golf. Play golf. And nothing to do there except play golf and wait for the sun to go down and try to go to a pool party.
Well, then I would tell you this. I can recall many a nights covering protests in the heart of Los Angeles. And as I'm walking back to my apartment, people are stacked.
What I was going to finish saying was with the bowling alleys, the museums, things like that. Ain't really, they, you know, people was kind of staying away from that. There's no school in, so no kids were going to any museums. People wasn't walking around like that. As far as the bars go, the bars are still open. All you got to do is find a restaurant with an outdoor patio and go get you a table and order a sandwich, and you can drink all day. That's all I'm saying.
That's true.
That's all I'm saying. So it's not
that's
like.
That's the loophole.
That's the loophole. You're not really closing anything. You saying you closing it, but it ain't really closed.
It's just kind of bottleneck. It's trying to contain. You know,
I saw a museum on the list, I'm like, man, stop, man.
So instead of Wild Wild West, it's just Wild West. You know, you dip it down just a little bit.
Hey, LZ, and you know, speaking of the West, and Travis, I think you brought something. The All-Star game was supposed to be played in the West this year, right? In Dodger Stadium.
And, yes, that is correct.
You know, guys, you know what that gets me thinking of a little bit?
What?
A little last man up in this, standing up in this piece. That's right. And I brought up Dodger Stadium, but there have been different Dodger starting pitchers who have started the All-Star game. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of them that have started the All-Star game. So, Keyshawn, why don't you go first? Tell me a Dodger pitcher that has started, keyword started, an MLB All-Star game.
Kershaw.
And off the bat, Kershaw has never started an All-Star game. I'm sorry, Keyshawn. You take a seat to the side. Travis, why don't you go ahead and give me one?
You said pitcher.
Fernando.
Fernando Valenzuela started in 1981, the phenomenon that was Fernando started.
Oh, man, never mind. Forget it. I misunderstood what you said.
Was it clear to you guys? Do you guys know what I'm asking?
No, I'm fine.
I thought you meant
on the current team.
No, that's why I said keyword started. Pay attention next time.
But I thought you meant on the current team. But never mind. I can sit this one out. Y'all hear me snoring, turn me off.
So, because Keyshawn has confused me with his wrong answers, you're looking for.
I'll say it again.
Okay.
A Dodger pitcher that has started an All-Star game as a Dodger.
Okay, but look, hold on, though.
No, hold on.
No, man, stop that.
I thought
that.
You were taking a nap.
No, because pre-meeting, we talked about All-Star players that are on the team this year that can make the team. That's what I was going off of, but never
mind. That's LZ. This is Rogers' last man standing. I changed it up.
You can keep that, too. I ain't taking that back east with me either.
Well, good.
All right. Well, I know that Ryu was a beast, so I'm going to assume he started that year.
Ryu?
Yeah.
Wow, this is the quickest we're ever going to go. Go ahead and play Travis's music.
Twice in one day.
Yeah.
No, man. I can answer it. Sandy Koufax, Fernando Valenzuela.
Travis, give me a couple other ones. Show these boys how it's done.
Bobby Welch mentioned one of them, the Koufax for sure.
Koufax in 1966.
Or Hershiser.
The other guy, Keyshawn,
you're wrong again. Just turn Keyshawn's mic off.
Here's one that I think you might have forgot, but it was a huge deal to them. I'm pretty sure Hideo Nomo started one.
Hideo Nomo started in 1995. Good job, Kev. And listen, there were two Dodger pitchers after that to start an All-Star game.
After Nomo?
Yeah, two Dodger pitchers.
Ryu throws one scoreless inning.
Be quiet, LZ.
Major League Baseball All-Star game start. What the hell, Raj?
That's not true.
What the hell? I'm looking at it right here.
What year was it?
I trust you, LZ, over Raj. Raj, that's what I'm saying. Now the listeners, y'all hear LZ complaining. See what I'm saying? Every time it's some shenanigans with
Los
Rogers
Angeles Times. How Dodgers Ryu rose from South Korea to MLB All-Star starter. What the hell, Ron?
No, he was a starter as in the game.
Oh, boy, you just I bet you if you look it up, Kershaw probably start too.
No, but I am looking at it. It was like
Major League. It says MLB All Star starter.
Yeah,
literally in the headline.
Hey, cut Raj's mic off. Unplug it,
Travis.
Yes,
Travis. And you knew Ryu started too, Travis. You're supposed to say something.
Well, Travis, I was surprised that Ryu was not on the list. Let's just put it that way.
You wouldn't have got past that anyway.
But this ain't the first time, man. You wasted about five minutes.
Do you remember Brad Penny starting in 06?
I would never have gotten Brad Penny.
And then Zach Greinke in 2015.
I would have gotten Greinke.
And then Don Drysdale started four All-Star games, 59, 62, 64, and 68. And then, of course, we can't remember Don Sutton.
Damn, man, make up his own game and can't ever get it right.
Yeah. Jorge, yeah. I want to hear my music, too.
LZ, this is his game he made up and put together and don't even know the damn rules.
Let's not forget the fact that you were first out still. Still nowhere do you see Kershaw as a starter. So there,
you
in the game.
You bring in the ball to the damn basketball game and they don't even pick you. We gonna use your ball.
Dude,
I got next
now,
man. Sit over there. Five already.
I'm not gonna lie. I am really, really surprised that Clayton.
But he hasn't.
Clayton, hold on. I don't think that's right either, Raj.
That is true.
Not right. I'm looking at it right here.
Clayton Kershaw has never started an All-Star game. I looked that part up because I thought that was
Raj,
a surprise.
Raj, me and Travis are looking at it. Right now,
nope. I want an apology. You can get you. I apologize.
Hold on. I'm not apologizing because I haven't been wrong yet.
No, you are wrong.
I don't know. Kershaw still in line to pitch next Tuesday. Sunday could be scheduled to start. It doesn't say. I'm still looking.
No.
I'm gonna need more than your word, Raj. I'm gonna need more than you telling me that it's right. Yeah, I would have won because I had a couple of ones in my back pocket, like Greinke and Nomo.
No, we don't know that either. You tried to play the okey-doke Orange County game on us.
I gave you Nomo, so that's not an okey-doke. I told you I wouldn't have had Penny. I told you that I would have had Greinke. I tell you guys the truth. I would have won this one anyway. This is a sweet spot for me. I think Raj is trying to make me feel good.
You know Kershaw started in 2017 in the All-Star game in Miami.
No, he didn't.
July 11th in Miami. You do know that,
no,
right?
No, he didn't. He played in it.
He was scheduled to start, but I don't think he did, Keith.
Okay, he was scheduled, then he decided not to, which means he started.
Mm-mm. Nope. Doesn't count. Bam, bam. You're the champ, Travis. Good job, guys.
No. You were wrong with me right up the gate.
We're going to have to void this out. This particular day in this game was voided out.
Ryan, apologize to us immediately.
No, first I want my apology for Kershaw, since that was the first thing said.
All right. LZ, you had a piece in this morning's LA Times talking about the alliance that has been formed among the professional sports teams here in Southern California. I want to discuss that next. Coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. You got to give me a heads up, man. I got my earbuds in. You're going to blow my eardrums out.
Well, you got to get the thing that what's the little man shaver thingy that LZ endorses?
Manscaped.
Yeah, you got to get the little thing that.
Man, I ain't manscaped in a minute.
Oh God, no one asked you about
stop.
That.
Yeah, stop.
I'm talking about his ears. I'm not talking
about your fault.
Jeez.
All right. LZ, I know you wrote about this. This is fascinating to me. I would have thought that this had happened along the line somewhere, and it hasn't. And I'm going to let you describe exactly what the alliance is between the professional sports organizations here in LA. But this is a fantastic idea.
It is. It is. And I'm really happy to see these franchises, you know, come together like this. They actually started with the COVID-19 response, where you had all 11 franchises, professional sports teams, get together and try to figure out how they can pull their resources together to survive as a business, but then also just sort of help and aid the community. You know, people who are hurting, need food, first aid or first responders and things of that nature. So the Alliance is just building on that sort of initiative that happened from the COVID-19. And what they've done, we're talking Lakers, Dodgers, everybody, basically. They pulled together money. They've also pulled together their access to corporate sponsors, their buildings, their staff. And what they're planning to do is over the course of the next 5 years, the Alliance, if you will help Black and brown communities, students, by making sports and physical education more readily accessible to level that playing field. Now, I know you're asking, like, well, how's that going to help anything when it comes to racism? And there's two different conversations that happens in regards to this. There's the anti-racism, which is what you saw Bubba Wallace do. Take down that symbol of racism. That's anti-racism. And then there's uplifting a disenfranchised community, which is what the Alliance is looking to do. Helping to fill in those financial gaps, those gaps in terms of mentorships, those gaps in terms of just exposure to jobs and careers. The Alliance is dedicating 5 years of its time to make sure that the communities in Orange and LA County are addressing this gaping need with the hope that it will set a long-term pattern of opening the doors that were previously closed to this community.
Now, off the record, LZ, how much money are we talking about?
Well, you know what? I will let you speak to Renata, who is the president of LE84, and she can help answer some of those questions for you, Keyshawn. Good morning, Renata.
Good morning, LZ. How are you?
I am fantastic. Congratulations. Today is the big day. You're announcing the news.
Yeah, we are. It's pretty exciting. Thank you.
Go ahead, Key.
Renata, I asked LZ, from a financial commitment standpoint, how much, if you can tell me how much has been put into these resources from an economic standpoint?
Yeah, you know, that's a question that I don't want to answer. Let's just say it's significant. The teams are putting in, you know, both cash and in kind over a 5-year period of time. You know, I don't want the amount to be lost on the significance of this moment. When you think about how competitive a sport market Los Angeles is, and you've got 11 sports teams in LA and Orange County coming together to respond to a moment in such a significant way and to align with a partner like the Play Equity Fund, you know, to drive social change in communities that need it most, minority communities, Black and brown communities, but really lifting up the Black communities. I want that to be, you know, the lead story. You know, there are resources coming in to help us engage the communities in which we're going to be serving over the next 5 years. But I think in addition to that, the significance of, you know, the teams using their platform and their asset to really talk about the injustices, to talk about play equity as a social justice issue. You know, the data about high school graduation rates for Black males being 59% compared to 80%, you know, using their platforms to talk about the obesity rate in LAUSD and how sport and engaging kids through physical activity, sport and structured play, you know, helps to arrest those things and is a key, you know, indicator in terms of kids being able to have academic success and graduate and go on to college. You know, I think that's what we want this moment to focus on.
Oh, 1 second, Renata. Do I know you?
You do, Keyshawn.
I'm sitting here. Your last name done changed.
Yeah, it did.
Sitting here and I'm saying, wait a minute. I'm listening to the voice and I caught the name. I said, wait a minute. That's my friend.
Derek and Lisa. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right. Okay. So you go on now, Travis.
Is it okay now? Is it okay, Keith?
Yeah, it's okay now. You go on talk normal with me, girl.
You're good. Renata Simrell, she's the president of LA 84, and she is in charge with leading the strategy of the Alliance. Was every last professional sports team here in Southern California an enthusiastic participant? Did it take a lot of wrangling, or was everybody on board from the jump?
No, everybody was on board for the jump. And the team presidents and the teams and the ownership groups, they were all in conversation, and we were invited, you know, to that conversation. You know, they recognized that, you know, while they're looking to change it, the team ownership and team presidents aren't representative of the community. And while each of the teams have done tremendous work through their community relations and foundation, you know, they said, we need to bring in, you know, folks who really know how we can drive change. You know, I worked for Mark Ridley Thomas after the civil unrest, a third generation Angeleno. My mom lived through the 1965 riots. You know, so we're deeply ingrained, you know, I'm deeply ingrained in the Los Angeles market and have been, you know, fighting for social justice throughout the trajectory of my career. And the work that we do here at the LA 84 Foundation and the Play Equity Fund, you know, this is what we do. And we had stood up the Play Equity Fund, you know, as a moment, you know, to really create a moment, a movement around sport for social justice. And it, you know, was encouraging to me to be on these calls and hear the passion, you know, that the leaders of these organizations have. And they were very specific. They wanted to do something different. They didn't want it to be just a press conference. They didn't want it to be just a moment. You know, they wanted to do more and to stand up for this moment and to be example of you, when you have intentionality, when you have passion, and when you have commitment and the right partner, you know, great things can happen. So, yes, they were all committed from the beginning, and it's been really inspiring over the last 6 weeks working with, you know, the teams and coming to this moment. So we're pretty excited. I like to say the work actually starts tomorrow, you know, to make sure, you know, we're holding ourselves accountable and driving the change that we all want to see.
Renata, I know it's everything's moving so fast and things are happening and change is happening every single day. Here we are now, school is on the horizon, but the LA Unified School District has announced that for the most part everything is going to be online, and I'm sure other school districts are going to do the same. How does that affect what you guys are going to do in terms of trying to get into the schools?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, I'd point to a project that we started shortly after we were sequestered is, you know, I'm mindful of, you know, families and kids in the communities that we serve. You know, they're choosing between food and rent. You know, the whether or not their families are going to get COVID-19 because of the close confinement. And so we switched really quickly, you know, our work with organizations who weren't working and actually created a play equipment distribution program through the grab and go centers with LAUSD. And so we've been since March, late March, getting balls and bats and jump ropes and play equipment into the hands of kids. And then corresponding those with some of our athlete friends of creating, you know, videos to inspire kids to stay active. You know, they're not able to move. And so we're saying that the importance of movement and physical activity is critical. And we distributed those videos on the KCLS station for LAUSD. And then we also have posted those on social and created a competition with kids, you know, just doing our part to make sure kids understand why you're, you know, confined and you're stressed. And the anxiety is that movement and play and exercise is critically important. So as we're looking to launch, you know, the Alliance and our Sport for Social Justice movement, technology is going to be, you know, a key component of that. And so, you know, initially focusing on, you know, online engagement with some of our grant partners that we'll be working with on this initiative. And then as we start to, you know, release the social distance and hopefully start to arrest this COVID-19 crisis, you know, we're very excited to be able to get together in real life because, as you all know, you know, the power of sport is about bringing communities together, you know, in real life. So, you know, we'll certainly switch to an online platform for the short term, but very much looking forward to being able to get back in real life and engage with these communities in a much more deep and meaningful way.
Renata, one of the things that really struck me in our conversation yesterday was the commitment to follow through in terms of following how these kids are doing even after they've graduated from high school. Can you talk a little bit about what the Alliance is planning on doing in terms with that data?
Yeah, sure. You know, one of the first things that we're standing up is, you know, working with a measurement and evaluation team and really setting, you know, what we find in the data-driven work that we do and have done for the last 35 years is, you know, what are the inputs that you need to get the outputs? And we're pretty well-versed on that, but making sure that we have a partner that's going to measure and evaluate, you know, the impacts of our work over the long term. And, you know, one of the conversations that we had with the sports teams was about changing the face of the front office and making sure that there's more, you know, opportunities for minority kids, Black and brown kids, Asian, Latino kids to really access, you know, jobs and careers in sport and not just, you know, aspire to be an athlete on the field. And so, you know, our conversation was, you know, back to my data point about 59% of African-American males graduating, 1 in 3 can expect to go to prison in their lifetime. You know, we own all of the negative statistics. So we have to go upstream and we have to start to give access and opportunity and exposure to these young kids about what opportunities and what careers, you know, can exist in the sports world across, you know, these 11 sports teams. You know, do kids know they can be a videographer? Do they know they can be, you know, a journalist? Do they know they can be a broadcaster? Do they know that they can work in PR or philanthropy? Or, you know, be in the executive office on the business side, an accountant or a, whatever those, careers are and in the finance and accounting department. And so this initiative is really about creating the conditions for kids to succeed, but then also providing exposure to kids. So if you're, if you're a great writer, to be able to expose them to, a PR person in a, for LAFC, and now they can aspire and really find meaning, in their high school writing class or their high school English class. And then now they know that they can actually study journalism in college. And so what this is about is really, I don't know if that was that Nike ad that said, if you can see her, you can be her. And I know growing up as a young person, my stepdad was a butcher. My mom was a grocery clerk. I knew I didn't want to do that thing, but I didn't know what other opportunities existed for me. And, fortunately through, a lot of trial and error and, some good fortune and great mentors, I was able to find my path. And we're trying to make sure that we're giving a pathway to lifelong well-being to the kids that we'll serve, not just through this alliance partnership, but really through the work that we do on a day-to-day basis.
It's so interesting, Renata, because I, as I listen and LZ explained everything and I read the article, obviously, but it's like, you're right. Growing up in Los Angeles and playing sports is all I knew. I didn't realize that I could be a general manager, I could be a president of a team, and I could be a trainer and a doc. Only thing I knew was sports and coaches. Didn't know the back room of everything, and you could be successful at doing that and be pretty powerful.
That's right. So that's right, Keyshawn, 100%. And here's another data point for you. I'm a bit of a data junkie. For every $1 of wealth that white households have, Black families have 10 cents. Latino families, 12 cents. So, when we talk about social justice, when we talk about system changes, when we talk about, how do we really make a difference? It's really about exposing the kids that we serve and that we, that we're able to engage as to what's possible. And for me, education was a key component of that. Being able to go to college, being able to work in real estate. I mean, I know how we worked in real estate. The first year I got a bonus, I was able to pay my student loans off. So when you think about what has kept the gap between those who have and those who haven't, there's system changes and there's a focus on how do you really make a difference. And I can tell you that the path that I've taken, the path that my husband has taken through education, is that we're now able to give back in a significant way, both in our professional and our personal lives. And I think that's what we're ultimately trying to do here, is to really look back. And 5 years was just a measure mark. Our hope is that this alliance and this partnership, continues because to see the change that we want to see, 5 years might get kids through college or to the first year of college, but we want to extend this. And how do we create wraparound services that kids are actually graduating? They're aspiring to the C-suite, of these teams or of these corporations, and that they're really changing the trajectory, and hopefully that 10 cents, becomes 50 cents and 60 cents. And hopefully you're able to close that gap over the long term. And there's some families that are actually matching, what white households have in terms of their wealth and income. So closing that income disparity is a key component of what we've been focusing on as well. And again, just giving kids, shining a light on that path. And then giving them the resources through their coach, through their organizations that, are creating those conditions for them, creating that safety net for kids to really aspire to be what they can be. Because I find that talent is universal, but opportunity is not. And so we're looking to give kids some opportunities.
Renata, with that in mind, if the kids that are going to participate in this program, can they get specialized in a sport? Like if I'm more interested in soccer than I am of baseball or hockey instead of football, are you going to funnel them to the sport or that they're more interested in, or is it just opportunities across the board?
Yeah, sure. We, just as of the L84 Foundation, for 35 years, we fund a variety of sports. I mean, fencing, equestrian. And so we find that not all kids are attracted to the most popular sport, right? Football, basketball. So we create a variety. And many of the grant organizations that we work with, the nonprofit organizations that we work with, offer a multitude of sport. So it's not specialized in the way that you're thinking. And we're also using sport as the hook, right? So I'll just use myself as an example. I was an okay student growing up, but if it wasn't for basketball and tennis, I don't know that I'd stay in school as much as I did and, strive to keep my 2.1 GPA. And so we use sport as a hook to engage kids. And then we focus on, well-trained coaches, not just in the X's and O's, but really a coach that is aware of how to bring the best out of a kid, positive coaching. How do you create leaders? How do you create perseverance and grit? You know, the kids in the communities that we serve are facing some insurmountable obstacles. You know, single parent households, maybe they're being raised by their grandparents. You know, we were in this food distribution line for our play equipment distribution. And, you know, we asked the family how many meals that they wanted. And the lady said eight. And I said eight. And she says, yeah, I have eight kids. And so when you think about, you know, those odds that kids are facing, that we seek to provide them with the resources to be able to, you know, overcome, to transcend those obstacles, you know, with the support network they have and using sport as a mode of engagement to do that.
Renata, just real quick, for those listeners out there who don't own a pro team, is there anything they can do in order to help in this mission?
Yes, that's a great question. You know, LZ, and my texts have been ringing off the hook. You know, I think it's just joining the Play Equity movement. I mean, playequityfund.org is our website. It's standing up. You know, people ask me, you know, going back to your question about resources, you know, they say, well, is it just a resource issue? No, but yes, it is a resource issue. I mean, when you think about, you know, the $54 billion budget deficit that the state of California is facing, you know, the governor is proposing to cut somewhere between $15 to $18 billion out of the K-12 system. You know, there was a strategy to take out $100 million out of after-school programs, and the after-school advocate network, you know, was successful in staving that off for a moment. And when those budget issues strike, you know, enrichment programs like sport are the first thing taken out. And I think you can see that at the college level, you know, with a number of Division I college programs are starting to cut their, you know, non-revenue generating sport. And, you know, certainly we've got to shift our thinking in that, how do we invest those revenues where it's actually having an impact? And certainly sport and structured play and movement is a way to engage kids. And I'd say the same thing for art and for music and for dance. You know, those things that are other than academics that actually connect kids to the academics are what we're striving, you know, to drive more resources in. To your question, LZ, you know, join the movement. You know, any small contribution makes a difference. We're going to have a merch, you know, program. We've got some pretty cool Play Equity shirts and water bottles and hats. You know, some people might not be able to make significant contributions like the sports teams are, but every dollar helps. You know, speaking truth to power and talking about the inequities that exist. You know, I like the title of your piece, is the protests are quieting down. And one thing that I'll mention with the sports teams is, you know, when we first started conversation, they wanted to respond quickly. And I said, you know, we can't respond quickly. We can, but let's take our time and really be thoughtful of how we make an impact. And I said, the significance of this alliance and this partnership with the Play Equity Fund is not today. It's not the press conference when everybody's like, wow, this is great. It's historic. It's significant about next year and the year after. And are we still talking about the work that we have to do to make the communities in which we are striving to serve better? 5 years from now, 6 years from now, 10 years from now. This is not for the faint of heart, and it's going to take some time, some commitment and focus. And so, you know, join the movement. If you're an individual, corporate brand, call me. You know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be to the Play Equity Fund. You know, we've partnered with 2,200 organizations across Southern California. We have collaborations with organizations like ours across the country in Seattle and Philadelphia. You know, we'll help you direct where those resources can have the most impact. If not in Southern California with the Play Equity Fund, you know, in a community near you. We want to just make sure that this moment turns into a movement and we're all doing what we can to make a difference.
Renata Simrell, she's the president of LA84. Renata, appreciate you coming on and telling us about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Renata. Right, talk to you later.
All right, Renata. Don't come on this show and don't announce yourself to me, girl.
All right, I'll see you, my brother. I'll see you.
All right.
All right, my man.
Okay, guys, let's come back and talk about it. That's just it's an amazing program, and there's so many opportunities, like you said, Keith, that you didn't even know existed as a kid because you're focused on being the athlete, being the coach. There are so many other things that are going on there. Plus, we already got guys trying to sneak out of the NBA bubble. All that's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.